I think this might be the most tabs I've ever had open for a podcast. I'm Brian Gimmerman. This is the Podium Game Podcast, joined by Michael Pina, who I think writes for everywhere on the internet. I don't think there's a place he does not write for. Would that be factually correct?
Yeah, we'll say yes.
But today, well, Derrick Rose got hurt. That was Tuesday. Well, not hurt, but the news broke that he needs another surgery on his knee. That news broke Tuesday night. Michael had something. If you want to go see it, check it out. It's on sportsonearth.com. You can go see it there. What were your initial thoughts when you saw the Rose injury?
I was just, I mean, it's sad. I'm sure everyone who watches the NBA, loves the NBA, was sad as well. I mean, it's devastating for a guy who won the MVP when he was 22 years old to have three major knee surgeries basically since. And, I mean, it just cheats us. It's a little callous to say, but it cheats us of watching all the unforgettable moments that he would have created over this time. And it also kills a title contender this season. The Bulls were my preseason pick, and that obviously is not going to happen anymore.
What do you think this means for them going forward? I mean, in 11-12, he played 39 games. 12-13, he didn't play at all. 13-14-10, and this year it could end up at 46. How do they handle it? What does it, from a big picture perspective?
It's rough. He's owed $41 million over the next two seasons, I believe. And then you have to figure out what you're going to do with Jimmy Butler. Joakim Noah is a free agent after next season. So you can't trade him, and it doesn't look like you can build around him. So I don't know what you do. And it's just a really tough position for the Bulls to be in. Although an eternal optimist like myself kind of leans towards the possibility that Rose can still come. I mean, he was looking like he was on his way back to not being his former self entirely, but he was playing pretty good basketball in the past few weeks, or the past month or so. So who's to say he can't do it again? He's still only 26 years old.
I hate having dead money on the books for no reason. Part of me wonders if it makes sense for them to stretch him and free up more cap space.
That would be I think a more rational avenue to go down if the cap was not rising, but the cap's rising dramatically so through the next couple, or the last year of his deal, and then he's expiring. So I don't think they'll do that. Plus, we don't know the official timetable of the surgery when he'll be back. I believe I read that doctors told him there was a chance it could tear after his last surgery, and that if they went in, it would be a relatively minor procedure compared to the one that he initially had. So we don't know how long he's going to be out or how serious this all is, but stretching him might be going a little too far, at least for me right now.
The Bulls are just, they're in a tough spot. Yeah, I mean, they got really lucky that Jimmy Butler ended up being as good as he is, because you have Joakim Noah, who's probably going to be dealing with foot injuries, and he's probably on the wrong side of his career with what's happened with him. And you have Rose as what were supposed to be your two cornerstones for the foreseeable future, and it just might not be that way.
Yeah, and I actually just wrote something about Noah before I heard about the Derrick Rose injury yesterday, about how I think yesterday was his 30th birthday, which is really tough to believe. And you're right, he's definitely on the downside of his career. Offensively, he's been atrocious this season, and you definitely account some of that to the knee surgery that he had in the offseason and the ongoing issues he's having with his ankle and knee. But he's just not the same player, I don't think, especially on offense. And You're right. The Bulls are definitely in a tough spot.
Derrick Rose wasn't the only point guard news that happened yesterday. Rajon Rondo got into it with his head coach, Rick Carlisle, and had some not nice things to say. That's hasn't gone well. Was this? I know you were your Celtics guy, right?
I am. Yeah. Yes, I am.
So, has the experiment in Dallas gone worse, about what you expected, or better? I'm assuming the better isn't part of that equation, but I felt mean not putting that in.
No, I mean it's been pretty bad. His numbers have been terrible. He's shooting under 30% from the free throw line. He's just, the assist numbers aren't even there, which was kind of understandable, going to an offense where the ball probably wouldn't be in his hands all the time. But yeah, it's been a disaster, and that doesn't even take into account his health and the facial fracture and how that affects his aggressiveness. But like I said earlier, I'm an eternal optimist. And I'm not counting out Rondo just yet if the Dallas Mavericks get into the playoffs and we see a little playoff Rondo. I'm still holding out hope, although post ACL surgery, he just doesn't seem like he's the same player.
No, over the last 2 years, he's basically shooting 40% from the field, and where the drop has came, his two-point percentage has just fallen completely off. What are you seeing? Why do you think that's happened?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, he just doesn't... He stopped being the aggressive guy who gets into the paint on offense, and it could be a factor of him not wanting to go to the free throw line, because he's still a wonderful finisher at the rim when he gets there. He just doesn't get there enough, and the jumper, there's been peaks and valleys with it throughout the years, but it's just not a weapon. And he's never developed a three-point shot either, so it's tough.
Hey, he's shooting 38% from three with Dallas in an extremely small sample size.
Yeah, extremely small sample size.
Yes. That wasn't being serious for anyone listening. I don't think he's a 38% three-point shooter. I'm a Knicks fan. I am absolutely terrified they're going to sign him this offseason.
You should be.
That's
although I was pushing for it as a when he was back on the Celtics, I was a little nervous that the Knicks would pry him away, and I think that the teams with cap space like the Knicks and the Lakers were a huge reason why they made the trade in the first place. But yeah, you should be, because he's going to be 30, and who knows how much worse this can get.
There was a time I would have loved him on my team. I've always been a big Rondo defender until more recently. I was devastated when the Knicks didn't draft him and they took Ronaldo Balkman over him, actually. he just doesn't seem the same, and it's sad for someone who was once, as unfortunate as it was, because he was a Celtic, was one of my favorite players in the league. That was always kind of hard for me to take. We did this when we originally talked about this. It was to talk about the NBA trade deadline. Where do you want to start with this? I will give you the option here.
Okay. Well, I think the most interesting trade is the Goran Dragic to Miami trade. And obviously the stakes have been lowered due to the unfortunate health situation with Chris Bosh. But at the time, on the day of the deadline, I thought that was the most polarizing deal, and I thought I was receiving emails and texts from people who were killing it on both sides and praising it on both sides. And I still haven't really figured out if I love it or not for the Heat. So what are your thoughts on that one?
I don't understand why we give Pat Riley a complete pass on this move. Or some people are giving Pat Riley a complete pass on this move. If this was any other general manager, I think he would get killed. Riley is operating under the pretense that Dwayne Wade is still Dwayne Wade and that the Heat could potentially be championship contenders. And that's just No, I don't think that's a realistic view of this team. So why is a team trading two future first-round picks, one completely unprotected 35 years from now, and one in 2017 that's only 1 through 7? He already traded his 2015 first-round pick to Philadelphia that now is, I don't even know where the hell that pick is anymore. It's somewhere else. Where did that pick go now? Now I just got sidetracked and confused.
Actually, I think... Wait a minute. Do the Celtics own that pick?
Is that the one that the Celtics... It went to Philadelphia.
I honestly cannot even keep track of Philadelphia and Boston. And I'm a Celtics fan, and I just don't even know what picks they own anymore.
Philadelphia, Minnesota... It ended up with Minnesota. Minnesota traded it to Philadelphia for Thad Young.
Oh, so Philly still has it?
So Philly might still have it. Wow, yeah. I wasn't expecting to go down that road, but that pick is somewhere. So they don't have a first-round pick in 2015, 2017, 2021. He's traded two second-round picks in 2016, 2017, 2019, all to build, well, part of those, the Philadelphia pick, the 2015 originally went to Cleveland, so that was for LeBron James. I'm not going to kill him over that one. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But to build a middling team, they have no bench. He lucked out with Hassan Whiteside, and so what's the point of this? Why are you trading for Goran Dragic to give him $100 million to not be competitive? I don't grasp it.
Well, so I think there's a few factors here. One is, or a few variables. One is the Eastern Conference and how terrible it is. The other is, what do you think about Goran Dragic? How do you think he's a great player? Do you think last season was an aberration? Do you think the best is yet to come? I think the answering that question kind of unlocks your true opinion of this deal, because the Eastern Conference is terrible, and Pat Riley doesn't really care about draft picks, obviously. So there's a rising cap, and they'll have cap space. So we have Bosch, Wade's deal. Wade is a player option next season, I think, after this season, for $16 million. And then Dragic is obviously an unrestricted free agent. And then you have Whiteside, who I believe is on... He's getting paid peanuts through next season, I think.
Yeah, one more. He has one more year on his deal after this year.
Okay, so he's just playing the free agency game, and that's worked out pretty well for him, I think. We can say clearly that 2010 was fantastic, and the guy's 70 years old, and he obviously doesn't care about rebuilding, which is understandable. So if Bosch doesn't get hurt this season, you have one of the best starting fives. You have no depth whatsoever, but could that starting five get all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals? And then once you're there, who the hell knows what can happen?
See, I don't think they would get to the Eastern Conference. That's assuming Wade is Wade, and we have no idea whether Wade will even be available to play in the playoffs.
That's true. He's looked pretty well when he's been out there, though, this season.
Yeah,
this is just a purposeful rest job right now. I don't know how serious his hamstring is.
That's completely fair that Wade has been good this year when he's played. I don't dispute that. But I just, like, the Bulls shouldn't have been building their team relying on Rose being who he was. I had another injury guy that I was thinking of off the top of my head, but I forgot. But the Heat... We're going about this like Dwayne Wade is still Dwayne Wade. Just doesn't seem like the right process to me.
Well, I'd push back just a little there, because if they guaranteed more years and more money to him, but the contract they gave him kind of was an admittance on Riley's part that he's not really sure how much more Wade has in the tank. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, that's very true and a fair point. But you asked me about Dragic earlier. I'd say he's somewhere between what he's done last year, what he did last year when he was third team All NBA, and what he is now. I think there's a a balance right in the middle where he probably falls into.
That's fair. And I think I was just looking at the numbers a little bit before this call, and the Miami Heat have been the slowest team in the NBA this season, which is understandable given their age. When it is, we're obviously dealing with an incredibly small sample size, but when Dragic is on the court, they are the fastest team in the league, and we're dealing with, I think, 66 minutes of action in two games. So obviously, take for that what you will, but it's very interesting to me that I thought that stylistically he may not fit, and they're kind of seamlessly throwing him in there, because the offense has performed pretty well too so far. But like I said, you can't really take too much from these numbers.
But there's no doubt that Goran's going to make them a better team. He's a better player than Mario Chalmers or Norris Cole was. There's no disputing that. And he also takes some of the pressure off Wade, gives them another offensive initiator, and kind of allows Bosch to fall back into that complementary role he was so good in the past couple of years.
Yeah, but now there's no Bosch to play, and they're obviously not going to win the title this season or even come close. So I feel like debating this trade is, while it's interesting, and I can see both sides of the coin, the stakes are just not there anymore, and it's just a huge bummer.
Yeah, and I don't blame Riley for that. There's no way to know that what was going to happen with Bosch, and that really sucks, because Bosch was one of my, I've talked to him on a couple of occasions, and reading his interviews, he was always one of my favorite players to kind of hear his thoughts on the game and just talk about things in general. He was always a very good interview with an interesting perspective.
Definitely, he's one of my favorite players.
The other aspect of that, how did you think the Suns did, considering the weird situation that was?
Well, I think they got a pretty good haul, right? So they got three players who aren't really players in the NBA anymore. And then they got those two draft picks. And I don't even know how many... We were talking about the Sixers and the Celtics before. I have no idea how many draft picks the Suns have. I know they have a ton, and they have a ton of flexibility. I really like what Ryan McDonough has done there, and I don't know if I like the Thomas deal, the Isaiah Thomas deal for him. I can see kind of maybe... Hina obviously knows more about that situation than I do, and if Thomas was a disruptive force in the locker room or whatever, what have you, I can understand making a deal for that reason. But to me, he was kind of the star of the deadline. He was everywhere. I'm talking about Ryan McDonough, and I loved the interview that you had the other day with him. So yeah, I can't even break down my thoughts on, so there are so many different things that he did, and what was your overall impression?
I'm with you that I thought the Thomas part was weird. If Knight's younger, but if right, I think Isaiah Thomas is a better player than Brandon Knight right now. Maybe that changes in the future. There's things about Knight that worry me, but he has some physical attributes and his age and his shooting that maybe that they're projecting forward that he's going to greatly improve, and that's I get that on their part, but I would have liked to have seen them give Thomas and Bledsoe a shot, because it was weird. They basically chose future financial flexibility. They didn't just get the first round pick from Boston for Cleveland. They freed up more money for them to spend over these next 4 years. Over these next three off seasons by dealing Thomas. So basically they chose a low, will most likely turn into a low-end first-round pick and financial flexibility in keeping Thomas around. And I'm curious to see how that ends up working out.
But then do you think they're going to – what is Knight going to command this summer?
between 12 and 15, right? You'd think.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really been a Brandon Knight guy, and so it was just a little. I thought he was a nice piece in Milwaukee, and I would have been fine with Milwaukee paying him. I don't know. They're going to have, what, 29 games? They're not going to make the playoffs, most likely, so the rest of the regular season to evaluate how Knight plays with Bledsoe, and then you have to either invest a ton of money. Like, I mean, what if the Sacramento... I don't even know the Sacramento Kings. Their financial situation right now, if they have enough cap space to throw a max offer at him at Knight, or what if the Lakers throw a max offer at him? I mean, it's tough, and it was definitely a roll of the dice, whereas Thomas, I think he is the better player. He's only 26. He's very efficient. His contract decreases annually, so I don't know. It was a very interesting move. I like how aggressive McDonough is, though. I think he's a very intelligent GM.
Where it makes sense is, and I wrote a story about this, why about a week before they traded Goran, I wrote about why it makes sense for them to trade Goran. But I don't think they did it. I think they were more forced into it. I think they would have kept him if it was their choice. But look, when you look at it, you have San Antonio, you have Golden State, Memphis. I mean, some of these teams over the next 2-3 years, Houston even, are going to – there's going to be – the Western Conference is going to flip a little bit. And I don't think during the time Goran would be at his peak that the Suns were going to be – it would have taken a minor miracle for them to overtake some of these teams in – this year, next year, or maybe even the year after. But what they have now is they have Knight, who's 23. They have Alex Len, who's 21. They have Markeith, who's 25. They have TJ Warren, who's 21. They have Bledsoe, who's 25. Archie Goodwin, who's 20. So you have a core of players now that if they decide they want to keep Knight around, and even if they don't, that you can like grow together and build together and kind of see what it turns into, and you also keep the flexibility going forward with the opportunity to make a trade if a superstar comes available.
Yeah, that all makes sense. It seems to me that they're in that kind of that they're emulating what Daryl Morey and what Danny Ainge did to just acquire as many tradable assets as possible, and then cash out when that superstar on the horizon becomes available. I don't know how high I am on a lot of those core pieces that you mentioned. I would probably say I love Alex Len the most. Every time I watch him, he seems to be better on both ends of the floor. So that's wonderful. But I wouldn't say they're stuck in on the treadmill of mediocrity or anything like that, just because of the flexibility they have that you mentioned. But man, I just love Isaiah Thomas, and I don't know why they did that deal.
It was, and from what he's been a pretty open and honest guy with the media. He said that he wasn't. He kind of took a little dig at Goran that he was like, "You heard the guy in the media complaining. It wasn't me." And the minutes were gonna open up with him. Him on Boston. Let's talk about him on Boston. He kind of falls into the same situation with the three-guard rotation, and they have that weird thing where they also have James Young waiting in the wings, who I don't know if you think Young can play any three, but now you have four guys who eventually are going to need time at the two-guard positions. But I really like how Thomas fits with either Bradley or Smart. Those are two guys that complement his deficiencies very well.
I'm just a huge fan of everything about the trade for the Celtics, in part because, just from like a visceral perspective of just a fan, it's one of my favorite trades that the Celtics have made in a long, long time. You get this young player, this efficient offensive weapon that, if we're being serious, the Celtics haven't had since, like, Paul Pierce was in his mid-20s. Someone who can score and create for others, like, at will. And he's so cheap. And I do think that he does complement Smart, especially. Smart's a huge guy. I don't think people know how big he really is. And he can play both guard positions, and it's okay in today's modern positionless NBA to have two ball dominant players or two players who can run pick and rolls on both sides of the court to be on the floor at the same time. So I really like the addition. I think he complements Smart, definitely complements Bradley, who cannot create for others with the ball in his hands, and he can't run pick and rolls, which has been a big... The Boston Celtics have been one of the worst scoring teams out of the pick and roll all season long. So Thomas will help there, and I think they got him not only for the short-term playoff run that they're trying to make, although that'll be harder now that Jared Sullinger is out for the year, but they also got him. I think he's a better or a more attractive trade piece, to be honest, than the Cleveland pick that they gave up, which is going to be in the high 20s in 2016, most likely. It's top 10 protected, but it'll be conveyed in 2016, and you'd have to think that it'll be, what, higher than 25. So I really like the deal.
And I like Danny Ainge, even though they're rebuilding, not being afraid to add some money to the books. That there's nothing wrong with it. As long as you're getting a player that has on-court value, has trade value, that it's okay. It's not the end of the world to have some money on the books as long as you have he kept flexibility going forward. They still have draft picks. He didn't blow up their rebuilding effort. It's you can do both. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, and a lot of people around Boston don't really understand it because they want the Celtics to tank, and it's like the Celtics aren't in a situation where they need to tank right now because the Nets are kind of doing that for them, right?
Isn't it nice to have the Nets as a trade partner? It's like if you can get the Nets or Knicks on the other line, you're good to go.
Exactly. But yeah, and adding money I don't think that Ainge was looking to necessarily add a player like that, but I think that Thomas's contract the value is really huge there. He's one of the more underpaid players in the league, I think.
The most fascinating part, and now it's crazy how all these teams are linked, but these are all separate trades. Now I'm going back to the other one, the Bucks, the three-team deal. The most fascinating part to me is Michael Carter-Williams. I can't wait. I don't think you can really judge what he did in Philadelphia because of the way they went about their style of play and what they asked him to do. And now to see him in a more structured system, I think we'll be able to start to actually judge and figure out what type of player he is, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I think it flips both ways, right? So last season when he was a rookie and he won Rookie of the Year, a lot of that was because of his, you know, per-game numbers or whatever, and the Sixers were just kind of running, and they had no real... Their system was just to play really, really fast, basically. And that was wonderful for Michael Carter-Williams' box score, which kind of inflated his value, or so Hinkie would have hoped on draft night when it was rumored that Carter-Williams was on the move. But I agree. I think Carter-Williams is an intriguing player. He's not as young as a lot of people probably assume, just because what did he stayed 4 years at Syracuse? I know he's 23.
No, I think he was one of those guys that probably were in high school longer. I don't think he went. Give me a second, and I'll tell you how many years he was in.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. He only spent 2 years at Syracuse.
Yeah, that's what
you're right.
He went because he was on the Final Four team that lost to Michigan. I'd throw that in there. Yep. Yeah, but even at 23, he's still young. He still has time to improve. I'm trying to bring up his shot chart. I'm curious to see how truly bad it is, like around the paint. That's kind of what I'm interested in, to see what that looks like.
I'm looking at it myself. It doesn't, this is making for a riveting podcast, by the way. but just watching that guy play, I've never been a big fan, and it was very hard to separate, you know, playing in Philadelphia and just how depressing generally it is with his potential. And when you can't shoot, which he hasn't really been able to establish himself as a respectable outside shooter in two seasons, that definitely hurts, especially in today's game. And I think that it'll definitely hurt the Bucks this season, losing Knight, who's a tremendous shooter, both catch and shoot and off the dribble. Replacing that with Carter Williams could be a problem. But we'll see how Jason Kidd is able to kind of mold the other parts of his game, because there's more to being a point guard than shooting. I know we get hung up on that a lot, though.
The most worrisome part is the 50% near the rim.
No, that's not good.
League average is 55%. He's shooting 50%. And you would think someone with his size and length would be better in those situations. But where the Bucks, if the hit they take on offense, that team could be really incredible defensively. They have, Henson and Giannis, I always screw that up. I'm awful with names. Carter Williams, Middleton. I mean, that team is long, and they're going to be able to cover all sorts of ground on the defensive end.
Right, they're already, what are they, their second best defense, top three defense in the NBA this season, they're fun to watch too, and they switch everything, or they switch a bunch. They're just so many versatile weapons, and so long on the perimeter and on the inside. And you're right, if that's their identity and that's what they're shooting for, kind of like what the Pacers have been in the past couple of years, just this very long, defensively stout team, then sure, if they think that that's good enough to get it done. I do think that the growth of Jabari Parker and Giannis on offense kind of gives them a leg up where Indiana didn't really have an efficient go-to scorer ever, really. I mean, they had Paul George and David West from time to time, but they didn't really have anyone who could throw out a ball game, string together really efficient looks at the basket. And they're kind of, I guess they're banking on Parker and Giannis becoming those players, which I would say is a pretty safe bet now.
In time, it might take a little bit. I really like Parker's offensive game, and I'm not overly concerned about his jump shot. I think that's something that he will do fine with, even though it wasn't great this year. And it's the same thing with Giannis. He's got to learn how to shoot a little bit.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, no, not shooting. That's the balance. We talked about it with him. That it's, you love what it does for the defense, but you do have concerns what it does for the Bucks offense. All right, there was another three-team trade. Pistons, Thunder, Jazz. I mean, pretty clear it was the right time for the Thunder to part with Reggie Jackson. I don't think there's any disputing that. How do you like Jackson on the Pistons?
I generally like Jackson as a player. I thought at the deadline, or leading up to the deadline, I knew if there was one trade that was going to happen, it was going to involve him, just because you kind of sense that not only was management unhappy with Jackson's role on the team and his play, but the teammates were not really plussed with him. And that's super important when you're making a run for the playoffs, and then you need to go, you have championship expectations and the pressures of Kevin Durant's free agency, which just linger over your franchise every single day. So I knew Jackson was out. in Detroit, I love it for them because I'm one of the probably the captain of the anti Brandon Jennings fan club, and I knew that he wasn't the answer there for Stan Van Gundy, and I knew that they desperately needed someone who can come in and run effective pick and rolls with their bigs, most notably Andre Drummond, for the next few seasons, and I think they found their guy. His jump shot is worrisome, but I think if he takes more or less looks off the dribble, the percentages will go up. I think Van Gundy alluded to this when they made the deal, and Jackson's development, they seem to be pretty high on it. So who am I to disagree with Stan Van Gundy?
It will make for a potentially awkward situation again next year, because Jennings is under contract for about $8 million. He's an expiring. Maybe they can move him in a trade or something like
that. Or buy him out.
Well, maybe not do that again. Just, I think one was enough for them on that. But what I do like, whether you might be a little higher on Jackson than me, but what I like about the deal is it puts Jackson in a position to succeed, because he's going to be their main ball handler. He's the guy who you're going to run the offense through along with mainly with Andre Drummond, and you kind of make that the core, and then you build around them with the shoot, and then you find your shooters to build around that heavy usage pick and roll. So what we'll find out is whether Jackson can handle it or not, because now he's being given the chance to do what he's best at, when in Oklahoma City he only got the chance to really do that in pockets of time.
Yeah, and it's so easy to make the Harden comparison, but we're not going there. But you kind of see it where it's like there's this guy who's probably a little more talented than his role and what the team is asking him to do, and it'll be interesting to see if he can become a full-time starter, an above average full-time starter. I'm personally high on the possibility. I don't think he has all-star potential or anything like that, but I think he's a pretty good player.
Yeah, no, you come off as very fair and balanced about Reggie Jackson. I don't think you're going over the top. I like what the Thunder did in this also. I think DJ Augustine is perfectly suitable for that bench role. And Singler and Novak give them a little bit more shooting. And Cantor next to Serge Ibaka makes sense. So the pieces fit with what they want to do also.
Cantor's been a monster. I mean, was anyone expecting this? He's been destroying the league since he went to the Thunder. I mean, it's scary. I love the Augustine. I was actually a little surprised that they were willing to include Augustine in the deal, that Stan was willing to do that, because I really like a backup point guard who knows he's a backup point guard and isn't worried about minutes or shots or anything like that, who can get to the rim, who can create his own shot, who can create for teammates. And so I like Augustine. I think he's a valuable player, and he played with Durant in college. They already know each other. I'm sure everyone's already been talking about that. But Cantor, man, like, if he blows up with the Thunder, I mean, and just continues to put up 15 and 10 or whatever he's doing right now for the rest of the way, which he probably won't, because I mean, Steven Adams needs to get some minutes, but if he plays well, that could be a steal, even though he's a restricted free agent.
What I kind of projected Cantor as for me, we always think of these guys off the bench that come in, anchor your second unit. It's always guards. It's Jamal Crawford. It's J.R. Smith. It's Reggie Jackson. I kind of saw Cantor as like a big man version of that, where he's not really great defensively, but he can come in against other teams' second unit and keep you floating offensively with his post-up game, with his jumper. And that, I thought that would be really good for them. So far, he's outlived those expectations with the Thunder helping them out in the starting lineup. But yeah, this is the advantage of having Serge Ibaka. You can play all different types of players with him because he can shoot threes and he can defend the rim. So that gives you all sorts of options of how you can construct the team, and that's part of where Ibaka's value lies.
Yeah, and it's why, for all that you just said, I think that the Thunder kind of were planning, or that's why they were targeting Brooke Lopez, to kind of be that guy who could come off the bench and just be the center of a second unit's offense. And if Cantor's able to do that, then, I mean, I know I wouldn't want my favorite team playing the Thunder in the playoffs this season.
Did you think a follow going to Portland, did that move the needle at all for you?
Sure. I think Portland is already a championship contender. I think they're a very good basketball team. I like Aflalo. I think his value the perception of his ability may still be a little inflated from that season in Orlando 2 years ago when he was fantastic as the lead guy. His shooting numbers this season haven't been so great, and we just kind of assume that he'll bounce back in a new environment, which it remains to be seen. But I kind of like how he's got that player option next year, and so does or Wesley Matthews is an outright free agent. So this gives them a little bit of insurance in that situation. Should Matthews leave?
Let's finish off here. I thought maybe the weirdest trade of the deadline was the Timberwolves getting KG for Thaddeus Young. Did you think that was something that made sense, or did you think it was illogical?
I think it's fascinating.
I think that's the best way to put it. I think you're right. It's kind of grown on me a little bit as it's gone on. I crushed it right when it happened, but I'm opening up to it a little bit.
It's like KG. Okay, so the Timberwolves they have so many young players, right? They have Rubio and Wiggins, Muhammad, Levine, Deng. So it's like you need that guy who, the leader in the locker room, the teacher, and there's really no one better than that at that role, really, than whether he wants to admit it or not, than Kevin Garnett. And so from that perspective, I love it. And I don't really know what his on-court contributions will be, but I don't think that matters at all. And I think if they have not signed him to any extension, correct? That was just kind of talk on deadline day?
Yeah, I don't think can they even legally do that right now? I don't know if they can.
No. So we'll see what happens with that, because I don't know if Flip Saunders is kind of a terrible GM, and I think a part of how we graded this deal was that it was something that took place between probably the two worst general managers in the league, so it was just kind of poo-pooed at. But yeah, if Flip and Garnett are able to agree to a fair deal, which is probably, I don't even know what league minimum, based on his on-court contributions, I don't know if KG would be willing to do something like that, but if you keep him on in the locker room, I think he's a wonderful influence on that team. I think the leap that all those young guys are going to take next season, I was talking to someone the other day. I asked them if there was a 50-50 chance the Timberwolves could make the playoffs next season, would they call me crazy? And they said yes, but I don't care. I think that the leap that guys like Muhammad and Wiggins particularly can make next season, plus the veterans that they have complementing those pieces, such as Pekovic if they don't trade him, and Kevin Martin, who seems perfectly happy in the role that he's in, and he's still a quality NBA player. I just really like what Minnesota did there, especially because I never really understood getting Thaddeus Young for that draft pick. That was a terrible, terrible trade. So
I would say your leap is probably 2 years from now and not next year. But here's the opposing thing. And trading that pick, depending on how with how it's played out, trading that pick was terrible. But Thad Young's only 26 this year. He has a completely reasonable $9 million option next year. I think it's a player option that he could have picked up and stayed. And then if you sign him to a reasonable extension, say 3 or 4 years, you could have had him through age 31, which is still the prime of his career, growing with those guys as that young core is coming into its own with a rising cap, with more draft picks, that it wasn't out of the question that Thad Young could have been a part of that core going forward in the future. So that's where...
I assumed that he was going to opt out, and that, I mean, if I was Thad Young, I would opt out, and I would join a title contender, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't see him opting in, but I get what you're saying, but I just didn't see him opting in, and I thought he was kind of gone anyway.
Man, I'd roll with Wiggins.
Well, LeBron disagrees with you.
Well, me and LeBron don't get along then. I would go with Wiggins. But we're not okay, but also I'm not flipping that there was some logic, even though it's probably not gonna work out, and I didn't love the idea. I actually thought they should have moved Kyrie for Love. That was my angle, but I would have been wrong on that also because Kyrie's gotten better this year. But this is flipping Thaddeus Young for a corpse that's a locker room presence that you could have signed in the offseason for nothing.
That's a good point as well. I mean, we're breaking down a trade. Like I said earlier, it was done by two guys who should not be general managers in the NBA.
And
so,
one of them might have made the best trade in the NBA in who knows how many years.
So yeah, I mean,
that this is the thing. He was either going to get Klay Thompson or Andrew Wiggins. He got forced into that. It really is amazing.
Yeah, I can't really support Flip Saunders.
You're just like, I don't.
No, you're making my brain just turn off right now.
You're like, I don't care what he does good. I refuse to accept any premise that Flip Saunders did anything good ever.
No, he fell ass backwards into that one. Like, nobody's business.
Yeah, he should send LeBron James all of the whatever LeBron wants. It doesn't really matter. Just give him anything he wants in the future. Thank you. What do you have? Well, we'll wrap this up. What you got? Anything plug that you want to get out there to let the people know about?
No, not really. I try to write 3 or 4 articles a week, so read them, I guess. I don't know. I like I said earlier, I have a piece on Joakim Noah that should be going up today somewhere. And if you follow me on Twitter or want to follow me on Twitter at Michael V. Pina. P-I-N-A, then you will see me tweet that article out there. I spent some good time on that one, and I think that the Bulls are in a lot of trouble, to circle it back real quick.
And his profile, this is entertaining. Sports on Earth, Grantland, Rolling Stone, Bleacher Report, Fox Sports, Triangle Offense, and that's not enough, and other special places too. So that's not that list is not everything. But yeah, Michael does an awesome job. Make sure you go follow him and check out his work. I read everything he does. Michael, thank you very much for stopping by, and hopefully we can do this again in the future.
Thank you so much, Brian.
All right, that wraps up another edition of the Podium Game Podcast.